This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Good morning. It is Friday, September the 17th, and this is the first full day of the Magi Fest. Yesterday, everything really began at 5 o'clock, and that was when the dealers opened, and then there was a lecture at 6 and 8, and a show at 10, and so we're going to talk about that a little bit, because sometimes when I'm at Magic Conventions, you know, I have Mark D'Souza who helps me with color, kind of giving us a little bit of background and some of the, discussing a little bit more in detail some of the shows and everything. Well, this time I'm rooming with Richard Hatch, the H of H&R Magic Books. Former, I guess, kind of still. I'm not quite sure what the status.
You know, I'm not sure either. I'm still the H. I'm not sure the company is still H&R, but I'm still the H. So.
Because Marshall no longer owns the company, or he was selling off of the website?
Yeah, Marshall sold the inventory that he had gotten from us in 2019 sometime, so 2 years ago, to Don Bursell, who was here at the convention. He's got a triple booth, and so I had a chance to see some of the stuff that used to be in Humble, and he's doing a good job with it. He's got a website. He still is adding continually many of the titles he's gotten, so he's not fully there, but I think he's got, 3,000 different things already listed there.
Wow. And what's the name of his company?
I think it's Don Bursell Magic or Bursell Magic Books or something like that. I should get out my thing and look it up while we're talking and figure it out. But it's a good website and very user-friendly. So Marshall is out of it. Charlie maintained after I moved to Texas, which was kind
from
of... So I moved from Texas to Utah to be close to my parents, and that was a little over 10 years ago. The decision was made not to take that business with me. And so that's when Marshall got it from us. But Charlie retained the publishing end of it and continues to do that. So his most recent publication is Volume 8 of his Nick Trost card creation series. Mm-hmm. And Volume 9 will finish that off, and that'll be out probably about a year from now. And so that continues. And he's got a lot of other irons in the fire once he finishes the Trost series, things he wants to get out. But the retail end of it, the non-publishing end of it, pretty much ended for us when Marshall sold it to Don Bursell. Right. But we like to go to conventions and we like to have the latest publications. And I still in Utah, I brought with me a fair amount of used inventory, some of the things that we perceived as being more interesting, signed titles or rarer titles. And so.
Like what, for instance?
Gosh, we've got a fair number of things signed by Di Vernon. Mm-hmm. Those come to mind, some other authors, and some not antiquarian titles, but Down's Art of Magic in the different editions. Mm-hmm. And things like that. Charles Bertram titles, so more Victorian, Hoffman, things like that, that didn't seem like they were Marshall's kind of thing, but seemed like at the time when I moved. Prior to that, until I guess about 2008, I was fairly active on eBay. I would put stuff up at a penny or 99 cents, whatever the minimum charge was, and with no reserve, and just let it go, see what happened. And I was usually very pleasantly surprised that it would sell for more than I would have asked had I been putting a price on it. That kind of ended in 2008 with the change in the economy, and then we moved. I moved. The company broke up. So I haven't. My intention was to do that again when the economy recovered, and I haven't. So I'm still sitting on a bunch of this stuff. So I took a number of boxes of those to Las Vegas, where I saw you at the Magic Collectors Expo, and did fairly well with them. But I still have a lot of that stuff. So Charlie and I like to go to conventions, and we like to have a presence in the dealer room. And of course, he likes to promote his latest titles. So that will continue for the foreseeable future.
What's another one of the new titles that you have there? You don't have the new song book yet of Mike
Caveney. No, that's a Mike Caveney publication, and he usually keeps those exclusive for a certain period of time. So it'll be a while. For now, you would need to get it, and I ordered my copy directly from Mike, and it's on its way. The books have arrived at the dock and arrived to Mike, and they've been packed and shipped, but I look forward to seeing it when I get home from this convention. But that should be terrific. Trying to think... Charlie tries to pick titles that people won't have seen before that he has shipped here. So the one I'm excited about, because I had heard about it but hadn't seen it yet, is the new Denny Haney book. And I brought that back to the room last night and looked through it. It looks terrific. So that's one where I'm hoping if it doesn't sell here, I'll take it home with me. So I'm not pushing it too hard because I kind of want to keep it. But it does look excellent. It is a higher price title. It's nearly $300. $295 is the retail on it. Which is a lot for a magic book, but it's substantial. It's a man's body of work, and it looks like it's really nicely done. So other titles that we have here, we have the new, although it's been out about a year now, I think the Eugene Berger posthumous book, you know, From Beyond, I think it's called, and that Larry Haas put together. That's really looks good. Gosh, we got a table full of the newest titles. Most of them I'd never seen before, so I can't talk knowledgeably about them because I'm just discovering them myself.
How many dealers are there this year? Do you have an idea?
I haven't counted them up, but it looks like a fairly full room.
It is.
So I would guess 24 in
that's
that
probably a fair, yeah, because there are two full rows, both sides, with the divider between each. And so, there are three aisles, is that right? Three aisles.
Two on either side.
That's right.
So... and there are a few gaps in it, but not a lot. Gosh, Mark Mason is here, of course, and he's always terrific. Gabe Vahuri is here. He's representing Potter & Potter. They've got an auction coming up. The Ken Klossman Part 1. And I asked him about that. I think it's going to be ultimately as many as 4 parts, possibly. And there's fantastic. The catalog is available online, and you can order a hard copy. I haven't seen a hard copy, but I think they'll be out very soon. That's kind of going to be very interesting because it is being held within days after the Ricky Jay collection that is being auctioned off in New York by Sotheby's. Mm-hmm. And there's some overlap. There's some things that are in both auctions. There's a Houdini upside-down water torture poster that is quite rare. Maybe those are the only 2 known copies. I don't know, but...
Gabe has one
at
Sotheby's.
So we'll see what happens on Thursday at Sotheby's and then watch what happens on Saturday at Gabe's. And of course, both are strong in association pieces, memorabilia. That was one of Ken's passions was, he had, Blackstone's jock strap.
Cufflinks and things like that.
Exactly. Strange stuff. And I think Ricky liked that kind of stuff, too. So. Yeah. A disappointment on Ricky's, and maybe it's just because they're trying to do it so quickly, is that the catalog will be online only. So you won't have a nice souvenir catalog that will memorialize and be something to remember Ricky by, as I understand it from their website. So
that's too bad, but I know that Gabe has got Volume 1 already out for this hardback of Ken Klosterman's collection.
Yes. Yeah, and so that'll be, testament to one man's passions, which will be nice. And now, on the Ricky Jay thing, Conjuring Arts has announced and is selling copies of a new Ricky Jay book that is pieces from his collection, I assume nicely photographed with a description written by Ricky. And that should be out in October, right about the same time as the auction. That's not the same as the catalog. It's not everything they're selling. It's not everything he had. It's curated pieces that he picked out to describe because he liked them and wanted to feature them. I don't know a lot about the book. I've ordered it. I think it'll be terrific, but it is disappointing that Sotheby's is not producing a hard copy catalog.
Do they do that for others from time to time? And it's just they didn't think Ricky's was important enough? I mean, who knows why, but I just wonder if they do others.
They certainly have had hard copy catalogs other things.
Okay.
My guess is that it's a because they're doing this within a month of right now. Now, I don't know how long they've had the collection and had time to go through it and that kind of stuff. Originally back in Las Vegas, when I first heard about the auction, I was told that there's no way that it would be sold in October. It wouldn't be till February because they would need to produce the catalog. And obviously they're sticking to this timetable and not going to produce it.
What if they're having issues with printing, as many other people have?
That could be part of it because,
there's a shortage of paper.
Yeah, there's so many people wrote books during the pandemic lockdown, and then there have been delays because of the shipping situation that there's a backlog of books at printers waiting to be done and then get over here. So that could be part of it.
I've heard that about newspapers even. There's a shortage now for some newspaper print, and they're trying to order as much as they can in advance, knowing that they're going to be running out of it quickly.
And not heard that. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Well, tomorrow I want to kind of follow up from a while back when we were at the Magi Fest. We sat and chatted for a couple of episodes, actually, that were out.
Sure.
And you were talking about a book that you were going to be working on, I believe, also, about one of the, was that the Utah magicians?
Or? Yeah, that turned into
okay,
an article.
Hold on. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Okay. All right.
Kind of a teaser for tomorrow.
<All right. laughs>
Because since we got time and you and I are rooming together, what I want to talk about then right now also is to go to what happened yesterday.
Sure.
So, again, it was like a half day, and we started off, then the dealers were open. That's why I wanted to talk about the dealers. And you said there are, a couple dozen or so. And then after that, first one was who?
Brent Braun started lecturing at 6. So the dealer room officially opened at 5, and it stayed open till 10. And that's one thing that, to me, I like, I like to go to conventions to go to the stuff. I want to hear the lectures. I want to see the shows. And like in Las Vegas for the Expo, the dealer room was never open when there was something going on.
Yeah.
With the exception being there was the time tours of the Copperfield Museum and the dealer room. The dealers went through the museum first and came back and could stay open. So when groups came back from the museum, they could go through it. For this convention, this is true of many conventions. I'm not picking on these guys, but the dealer room's open from 5 to 10. But, hey, there's a lecture at 6. There's a lecture at 8. What do I do if I want to go to those lectures? So Mark Mason was nice enough. He gets these at the dollar store, a plastic, it's like a thing for painters or something, and I can cover the table
drop cloth.
And so he let me have that so I can cover it up, go to the lecture, come back, uncover the table, cover it up, go back. Because I think they should close because the dealer room is pretty much dead. Everybody goes to the lecture.
And it's right next door. I mean, literally next door, the rooms.
I would prefer if it would close and everybody would go to the lecture and then it would reopen and be timed that way. But but it worked out fine, and some dealers stayed open. I mean, I think most of them did, but I would have been disappointed if I hadn't been able to go to the stuff.
But there are 500 people, 500 registrants. They're capped out.
I thought they were closing it off at 300, but it seems to me there are more than 300.
They were going to be 300, and then he finally went to 500, and then he said yesterday that due to COVID, there were some people that literally the last minute, like Charlie, for an example. He said, so we had 12 registrations that were still left, but he said, I'm sure they're going to go quickly. And I've had people since this podcast had come out have said, I'm coming.
Yeah.
When I did this virtual Magic Martinis yesterday, there were people who said, hey, really? I'm coming from Chicago. So I think they might have sold out then by now. So that was from 5 to 10. And then Brent Braun started at 6.
He started at 6, 6 to 7. And I wasn't able to I went back and forth because I got worried about, what if someone's there to pick up the pile that they started? And so I went back and forth and checked on it. But I enjoyed what I saw him do. I know he started with his Torch and Restored, a Torn and Restored card effect that he put out, 20 or so years ago.
He did. He said he was like a little kid when he first came up with this, and essentially it's unchanged. But the idea and the variations of that, he has helped people on Britain's Got Talent and America's Got Talent who have won using that method that he has used, applied to other kinds of things. Now, what he does a lot, apparently, is consults. I mean, he doesn't just invent or create. Does he still work for Penguin? I don't know.
I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if he does. And Penguin, of course, is here in Columbus.
Right.
So
they've got a booth down
there. They do have a booth, yep.
Mm-hmm. So he talked about that, and he had a couple other card tricks that were, of course, very clever. He's a good lecturer, and afterwards there was a lot of sales
What kind of stuff did he have to sell? Did he have lecture notes?
He had notes. He had a special lecture booklet, actually a paperback booklet that was probably about 60, 70 pages or so. And then it explained many of the things that he had then in the lecture, so it wasn't just a set of notes. It was a nice bound thing. Awesome. And then he had a couple of things he was selling. I think he did have a DVD, the Penguin probably put out, and then some tricks that I think
Penguin
he had.
Lecture, probably.
Yeah, Penguin Lecture, exactly. So the lecture will last about an hour. Sometimes the hour and a half. I mean, at conventions, they give you an hour and a half, and sometimes it's an hour. This was an hour. So his was 6 to 7, which gave you a little bit of time then to go do the dealer's room and then come back at 8
for
John Armstrong.
When that let out, boom, the dealer room filled up fairly quickly and stayed that way until the next event started, which was John Armstrong at 8 o'clock. And I know you had to miss some or most of that because you were doing an interview, but that I did want to go to and close down and went to it. I missed his introductory stuff, so I'm not sure what people said about him. But he did a stand-up show, and people think of John by his past reputation as a close-up guy, as a card guy specifically. Yeah. And so I think he wanted to showcase this because he's not just a close-up guy. He does his stand-up show. And so he did the show and then I think pretty much explained the whole thing or went through it. I think he wanted to highlight, and it wasn't a teach a trick kind of thing. It's like, here's a show. And he wanted to emphasize why he put the show together the way he did.
It was like a 20-minute show he did, or what?
No, it was substantial. I think the show was at least a half hour. It did have some card stuff, but it was, I would describe it as, a parlor show. But he was doing it on stage, and they had the big screen, so you could follow everything. It started, the opening that I recall, at least what he was doing when I got there, was what we would recognize as rope magic, but he was doing it with a necktie. Mm-hmm. And some really clever stuff was a combination of David Williamson's ring and rope routine and some George Sand stuff. But he tied it thematically together with his own life story. He was raised in Orlando, worked the theme parks, Disney, and then moved out to L.A., went to the Magic Castle. And so he tied the tie effect in with their dress code and how he had misinterpreted it. And it was very funny and very clever and pulled things together. Actually, the first stuff he did I remember a gag about IKEA, but he had a little flat thing that he shook and it opened up and made kind of a container for him to drop stuff in. It's like an instant clothes bag or garbage bag or something. Yeah. It was kind of cool, and that's where he said, my electric magic from IKEA. So I guess that's something that you can get from IKEA. I'm going to go online and look for it. It was pretty cool.
It is important, I think, to have a drop bag. I've had a drop box, when you finish things, instead of putting it back, you're finished,
What it reminded me of is, there's that Robert Harbin table where you bring it out and boom, it kind of opens up and stands up. It was like a Harbin table, but with a kind of a transparent thing to hold the stuff.
Laundry bag, basically.
Yeah. So when he finished up, he's done with the tie gets dropped in there. He finished something with a paper bag, the bag gets dropped in there, and so on. So it was his, and then at the end, you can pick it up and take it all
That's
off.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that was his opening. I know he did do a bunch of card stuff. He did a card stab that I recall, a stab in bag, so stab the card through the bag. A fair amount of audience interaction. I remember him talking about that he felt you should have an in-one piece between every audience participation piece. So you don't want to have people up on stage with you the whole time. You want to have that punctuate it with things you do in one yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. I think his big finale was, I think he had three kind of hard-hitting things that he wound it up with. But I'm sorry, I think he has lecture notes. I scooted back to the dealer room before he gave his wind-up pitch. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly what he has, but I'm sure it's worthwhile. He's a very intelligent
Well, that was interesting comment, because I, again, missed that. And I do a lot of stand-up shows, and I also am very conscientious about trying to make sure that I don't have an audience volunteer. They sit down, have somebody else. You have to have a little bit of you time, so that's why you have things in between.
One thing I remember he emphasized, and I thought this was very intelligent, is that you don't you don't just grab someone from the audience and come up, bring them up. He wants to see them and talk to them and get their, make sure they're comfortable going up there, partly because he says if you start out and say, hey, sir, come on up on stage, and the guy says no, you're going to have a very hard time after that getting anybody to
That's
say
exactly
yes.
Right.
So you want to, make sure they're comfortable being up on stage with you, and you know who they are and their name, and get their story. So you have a little relationship.
It's a good idea to have a relationship, and then ask for permission. Because if you ask for permission to begin with, you don't really answer. It could be no, and then you start an avalanche.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think I'm going to try and find out if he has notes still available, and get a set for myself, and maybe some for H&R to sell for Charlie. I'm sorry I had to leave early, but I'll bet it was worthwhile.
Then after that, you went back to the dealer's room and been hubbub, and I know there's a lot of session that goes on out there in the lobby.
One thing I missed, but I think it was going on, is it Terry Ward? Is that who's there?
Yep,
and he was supposed to be out there doing, walking around and stuff.
Well, he had a booth. Trade show booth has popped up.
So you
can
come by and,
So you can walk by the booth.
He's another guy. He was, 30 years at Walt Disney World or something like that, and a lot of experience. I know he's a mentor to a lot of guys like John Armstrong and Steve Marshall, my friend in Japan, knows him from that period. And he came by the shop in Umba once. He had a, I think his brother-in-law lives in Kingwood or something. And he came by the shop. Really nice guy. And he was here. He was the hit of Magi Fest a couple of years ago when he came and did a formal kind of set on stage.
It was a Genie convention a couple of years
maybe
ago.
Maybe that's why. Maybe I'm getting it mixed up. Yeah, and people were kind of not expecting much because no one's heard of the guy.
He,
and
he killed.
Yeah, it was great. It was really great. Yeah, he's true.
Well, then afterwards, as we start to wrap up over here to go to breakfast, the next thing in the evening then was the last thing with John.
So the evening closed down at 10, and then so the only event then was John Graham, who did a show and a lecture. And
corporate show, kind of.
Yeah. Now, is he from Texas?
I'm not
sure what his backstory is. He was given a terrific introduction by Ossie Wendt, who is his good friend, and Ossie will be featured today, I think, and tomorrow. Yeah, Ossie Wendt does a show tonight in the 9 to 10 slot. And I thought the show was very commercial. It was very, it was material most magicians are familiar with. Mm-hmm. In other words, he wasn't there to fool magicians. And Ossie kind of said that, you know, to appreciate this properly, you got to, you know, pretend like you're a layman and haven't ever seen this stuff before.
Yeah.
When, unfortunately, because we were coming back, we were in a different hotel and we had to walk back late at night, you and I missed the lecture part of it. And my impression is he's got a book out that I think Vanishing Ink has published that Matt King has written. An introduction.
It's called Stage by Stage, I think.
And I think it's about how to be effective on stage, how to build the show, how to promote the show, how to do corporate stuff. And I think that's what his, I think his lecture was not, here's explaining what I did, because I think most magicians wouldn't have been fooled by it.
No, I mean, so he was doing like Ring Flight and Professor's Nightmare and, you know, Bell and Lemon and Himber Wallet. I mean, the pedestrian things. Yeah.
But did them very commercially, very well. And, you know, I think what he's going to emphasize, terrific personality, very personable guy. I think the lecture would emphasize how to take what things you already know and already do, maybe in your drawer, and make them something you can sell, something you can make money from. Something.
And I think that was a lot what the lecture was about. Again, you and I had left early, but it seemed that he was trying to encourage people who were in the audience because we did have preponderance of young people here.
Right, and he started out by saying, you know, if you haven't ever been on stage, if you're just doing close-up, I encourage you to do stage.
Correct.
So I think part of it is going to be things you're going to learn by getting up in front of the group and things you can adapt what you already know from being a close-up guy to be successful as a career.
Professionally make it a career. Right. I think he was trying to get people out of the basement and off of YouTube, you know, to kind of come up on stage and actually do something to make money, you know. So anyhow, that kind of wraps up what happened there yesterday.
Yeah, a good day and a good turnout, and people will continue to show up over the next couple of days, so I expect it to be a pretty successful
event. A lot of things that are going on. This is going to be a full day today and going until late this evening, and so tomorrow morning we'll recap what happened tonight, but we'll be talking with people from time to time, and so it's about time for breakfast right now.
It is.
Okay, Dick, thanks very much.
You bet.
And until later, was Richard Hatch. This is Scotty out. Well, the first lecture is over. We just finished listening to Eric Jones' lecture on coins, as you would imagine, and cards. Have a couple of card tricks in there as well. And I've got someone who is with me then now who is a friend of the Magic Orb, which means he's one of our patrons. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Mr. Mark Pocan.
Pocan, did I pronounce it correctly?
Yes, Pocan.
Got it. And you're actually a representative or a congressman? What exactly is
I am a congressman from the state of Wisconsin, represent the 2nd Congressional District.
When this is your first convention, live convention, that you've been attending, obviously you said. Have you been attending any of the virtual conventions?
I had. I did a few others. I think Mindvention, a few others that happened over the last year and a half. But Magi Fest last January was the last convention I got to.
And because this is not so far away from your home, do you get to Magi Fest frequently? And how many have you attended?
Yeah, Magi Fest and Magic Live are my two, probably for the last decade or so I've been coming here.
And what is it you're looking forward to this? I mean, just seeing people and getting out, or was it anybody in particular?
Absolutely. I think the number one thing is just seeing people after a very long period of time. Ken Weber's a very good friend, and we get together and talk magic and politics, which is a lot of fun. But, you know, just getting a chance to see the dealer's room right now, to get a chance to catch lectures from people that have had a year and a half to develop a lot of new stuff, it's a great experience.
I was just talking with someone recently, they were saying about how a lot of people have been writing books during lockdown, but there's not enough paper to go around because of so many books that are trying to be published. That's why there's a delay in getting things out.
Also shipping right now, you know, what used to cost hundreds of dollars is now thousands of dollars to get shipped across from China in the shipping containers, and it's creating a lot of problems.
You mentioned Ken Weber. Is he here? I didn't see Ken.
Yeah, Ken is. Ken got in late last night.
Okay, now he had a book out. Well, I guess he had a second book out a while back. Try to remember the
Maximum Entertainment.
Entertainment, then Maximum Entertainment 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was thinking, is he working on another one, or do you know?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, he said he spent 2 years. We were talking about this last night.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to work on a book on politics right now, and I've been talking to Ken a little about that because I've never written a book. And but
politics and magic, or just
politics? But we're going to mention magic in it a little bit.
Okay.
But it's more a Q&A kind of on different parts of Congress to explain a little bit about how things operate. Much like I do, like on Magic Mondays, you know, I try to put out videos to explain Washington, but I use magic tricks. You know, in this case, it won't necessarily, because it's written, be about magic in Washington, but trying to explain Washington, because I think, you know, for many people, it's still a pretty remote process.
Well, you know, Joe Corsillo, I guess, and of course, Joey Corsillo, and he's an attorney and goes by the Mind Shark now.
Oh, okay.
He had his own practice and is married to a judge. Anyhow, when he was teaching law and trial law, that he was would talk about psychology and bring in magic and prediction, you know, how you choose a jury and different things like that. So I'm sure there are things within politics also that have some relationship.
Oh, yeah, there's a little misdirection in both professions, perhaps, maybe some deception. And so using that to be able to explain Washington, I found to be very helpful. People love it back home. And often, you know, when I go to a school or something, they ask me to do a magic trick, and more than glad to, because I think it shows, you know, the human side of what we're trying to get done.
Right, right. Well, Mark, it's great seeing you again. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks so much. Glad to see you today.
You bet. Enjoy the convention. We'll talk to you later.
Yep, thank you.
As Mark Pocan for the Magic Word, Scotty out. So we are still in the dealer's room. We're between sessions, and for some of you, might remember a while back we had an episode with Werner Reich, and he was the one who had written the book. Was it Concentration Magicians, Concentration Camp? What was the name of the book?
The name of the book was
some kind.
There are a couple of books, three books in the. The one was.
Josh, what was the name of the book?
Death Camp Magicians.
Death Camp Magicians. There we go. Got it. Very good. So we talked about that from before, and it's good to see you. You're looking even better and chipper than before.
Yeah, because your eyesight is failing.
So how is your mentalism career coming along? You still doing a lot of mentalism?
I haven't done any mentalism for a few years. I haven't even done any magic for a few years.
Well, we've all been in lockdown.
A reason for the... My wife has been very sick for years. She had cancer and she passed on. So in addition to this, I've been speaking in schools and various locations for about 100 times a year. And so my time for magic has been off. I found other priorities.
What about during the time of when we've been locked down in COVID? Have you done Zoom meetings and
schools? I've been, over the last couple of years, I've been doing a lot of Zoom sessions with schools and interviews and work like that. A great deal, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Yeah, which took me... all over the country. Before I was traveling all over the country. Now it's
a lot easier.
It is and it isn't easier. It's very, very difficult to speak without pictures, trying to, in a very brief period of time, try to recreate a period of time which is unthinkable in more than in our present day time. You know, it's thank goodness we don't have to, but sort of the things came back, for instance, recently with the Afghanistan trying
to withdraw
scene. Well, I was reminded of my own childhood when we were trapped and tried to escape.
In Poland?
And no, I was in Yugoslavia. I was... we escaped from Germany to Yugoslavia, and then we were trapped there, we tried to escape from there.
Yeah.
And we couldn't, and that's the same thing with the Afghanistani. You know, they're trying to escape, and nobody wants them, and they can't even get out.
So we're seeing history repeat itself.
I see identical. I can empathize with them. I can see exactly the way things were.
Man. Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking recently, 130 years from now, there are 7.5 billion people on the planet. 130 years from now, there will not be one of us still alive. Think of it. I mean, even those who are born today, 130 years from now, they'll all be gone. It'll be the next generation. The important thing is that we do remember history. We do know what happened. And these kinds of stories are passed on for those future generations.
But, you know, people are really not, they cannot visualize what happened. They cannot visualize the cruelty and the brutality and the thoughtlessness. I spoke to many, many people about it over the years. I've done a lot of research. And the general reaction is basically, how can a person go in daytime, murder people, murder babies, murder mothers with little children, and then go home and hug their own children?
Yeah, you know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
how do you
reconcile it? How do you reconcile that people of super intelligence like Dr. Mengele, who had a PhD in anthropology and MD in medicine, a highly educated person, acted in a totally bizarre in a form of aberration, you know, when he operated on people without anesthetics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we cannot understand it. Yet it happened.
No, but it did.
We have hundreds of priests who murdered children and adults. How do you reconcile people who teach love and understanding and forgiveness on one side and commit murders on the other?
Well, it's amazing when I think about people like Corrie Ten Boom, you know, who has forgiven those people who have been had such hatred and who were murderers, you know.
I don't know. You know what? In Judaism, forgive only if somebody asks you for forgiveness.
Well, in Yom Kippur, don't you?
Pardon?
Isn't in Yom Kippur whenever you ask for forgiveness from
anybody? No, well, that's for yourself.
Okay.
That's strictly for yourself.
Gotcha.
So you have a direct relationship to God. But if you committed a sin against me, and you have to ask me personally to forgive you.
I understand.
And then it's up to me. It's not for me to forgive you if you don't ask me for it. You know?
I understand. Okay.
So that's number one.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if I forgive you, do I have the right to forgive you? For what? I'm not going to forgive you for killing my mother.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'm not going to forgive you for you know, how can I do that? I cannot forgive you for stuff that you committed against other people.
Right, only things against me. I see.
Precisely.
Okay.
And what happened to me, I wouldn't forgive you.
Listen, I want to encourage people to go back and listen to the episode where we talked in depth about a lot of these things. And Warner, I thank you very much for coming again.
Right,
are you enjoying the convention so far?
I'm having a ball. I always love conventions. I love the people. I love the books. I love the gimmicks. I just love magic.
And how old are you now? You're 92?
No, I'm in the end of the month, I'll be 94.
94, okay. Yeah. You're looking good, like I said. So keep up whatever you're doing. You're spreading love and goodness. So thank you very much. Good to see
you
again. The Magic Word Podcast. That was Warner Reich. Scotty out. Thank you. We just finished the special session. Well, actually, first of all, we had the lecture that was by Eric Jones. Again, I talked about this a little bit earlier in the podcast here. Did coins and cards, very well done, and he's got a great personality, great presentation, and it was a really good lecture. Highly recommend that for future organizers who are thinking about having somebody. Eric is always great and just a great gentleman. And I would say the next session was really interesting because it had a nice diversity, but we're going to talk about that a little bit. I've got my good friend and a friend of the Magic Word, one of our patrons. Thank you very much, Nancy Anderson from Chicago. Hey, Nancy.
Yes, Scott. So good to see you after 2 years.
Yeah, it has been 2 years. That's
yes.
Right. Because we haven't been out in the world, you know.
I know, and I'm such a huge fan of your work. Thank you so much for everything you do for Magic. It has been just an amazing turnout to be here. There are probably, what, 200 people, 300?
500.
500
people.
Yes.
They sort of were expecting, and people who weren't showing up, they had a few that were left that made a last-minute decision not to come, and so I think those have sold out also. So I think we got a full house.
The only thing I'm kind of mad about is I cannot put on my lipstick because of the mask. So it's been interesting to be able to just meet people that I haven't seen for 2 years. Joshua Jay and everybody around here are such a great host. I feel like I'm coming back home. This feels like a family reunion.
Right.
I'm very.
You've been coming for how many years?
Oh, since I'm a new magician, it's been only, this is my fourth.
Okay.
Magi Fest. Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, my history is pretty simple. I became a magician way later in life, and I have immersed myself as a student of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been
big time, because, I mean, you have been featured in Chicago Magic Lounge, and you perform a lot of places and do things.
It's been fun. I'm a good student, and I think just being a lawyer allows me to be very pragmatic about my thinking and very reflective about my magic. I love cards. I love sleight of hands. And I have been able to really begin learning about the famous magicians, which I didn't know before. I'm not the kid with the...
Have you been buying books then on history?
Yes.
What are some of your favorites?
I like history. Right now, because I need to learn about magic, I am buying books that deal with techniques. And so I started with the whole collection of Roberto Giovi. I have Nick Trost is one of my favorite. I am a fan of Tommy Thompson, and I had the pleasure of meeting him at the Chicago Magic Inc.
Thompson?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. And so I have a huge commitment. I guess it's a personal commitment because it is a hobby for me.
Mm-hmm.
And just meeting new people and asking them about their favorite techniques and asking them to show me live. People are very willing. This is an amazing community. Last night, I spent a little bit of time with Assi Nguyen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
he's
an amazing magician. So.
Right. So what did you think about this last session that we had?
Absolutely fabulous. There were actually Andy Glanville, protection of intellectual property is one of my favorite topics because as a new magician, I buy a lot of magic.
Yes, and as an attorney.
Yeah, but I don't go for the cheapest or the easiest way to get magic. I'm pretty respectful of the artist.
Yeah.
And so I'm a great client of Vanishing Ink and Penguin Magic, and it's been interesting to learn about all of the people that are stealing, you know, intellectual property from these artists. But the most recent presentation was about technology, and this gentleman has used 3D printers to be able to create prototypes.
Servos and different kinds
of things. It's
amazing. Yeah.
Yes. I think magic has evolved and it will continue evolving, so I'm real excited to be part of the community.
It is moving in the right direction, I think, then also. And I'm excited then too, Nancy, to see a lot of young people here. I've got to say that the median age must be somewhere around 40, maybe?
I would say, 38, 40.
In the late 30s, because there are so many people in other conventions.
It is.
It seems like it's you know, the average age is dead, basically, you know, but there is just a lot of vitality here.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I think this is a wonderful city, too. Mm-hmm. Columbus is a pretty central. I hope eventually they'll do it in Chicago. That would be fun.
Well, they have tried a few conventions in Chicago. I know Tom Dombrowski, I believe, had been involved in some conventions way back when also, which I think he's supposed to be showing up today. I just saw
him. I haven't seen him yet.
I haven't seen him yet, but he said he was going to be coming. But anyhow, good to see you.
Good
Thanks
to
very
see
much
you, Scott.
For the Magic Word Podcast. That was Fancy Nancy. This is Scotty Al. And as we are kind of waiting for the next activity, which is going to be Alex Boyce is going to be talking and performing. I heard some doves back behind the stage, so I'm guessing he's going to be doing his dove act and then explaining that perhaps. But I've got Steve Brundage with me right now, who's the master of the Rubik's Cube. Hello there, Steve. How are you?
Hey, how's it going? How's your day?
Fantastic. How are you enjoying the convention?
It's great. It's been 2 years since I hung out with magicians at magic conventions, so I've missed it a lot. I've been in Los Angeles, so, you know.
Yeah. What have you been doing the last 18, 24 months?
A lot of meditation.
You haven't been recreating or new?
I have. All brand new magic. Like, for me, it's like all new presentations, all new. My show is totally new.
Is it?
Which is really great for me because it's like I'm doing it for the very first time.
With Rubik's Cubes, or again, or are you kind of going in a different direction?
Other material, too, but a lot of, it's not like new presentations for the Rubik's Cubes. Obviously, when you do it, a lot of people take your routines. Well, they'll do my act, you know, verbatim, so it's nice to have new presentations where no one's doing the presentations I'm doing currently.
Yeah.
You know, hope they might catch on so people might do them again. So.
Did you do anything over Zoom in order to test out some lines and things you were saying?
I booked a couple corporate virtual Zoom shows, but I didn't really advertise for it. For me, I decided to just wait it out, wait for a match to come back, you know.
Yeah. So how do you write that out? I mean, do you have ideas? Or you grind it? I mean, when you're working on the scripting of that routine, do you sit down like over a cup of coffee and work and scratch it out, or over to, you know, pencil paper
I have some routines will come in almost like a complete form download, where literally it'll be a moment where it clicks, and then all of a sudden the entire routine is almost already written.
Yeah.
Where it's like then it just all comes, and then when I work it out, I might tweak things, but the basis is all there.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes like that, it's I will occasionally grind stuff out, but usually a joke or idea is almost complete when I hit it. You know, the moment it clicks, and it's like, oh, that's something, and you know that something exists there. You just have to pull it down and work out through it, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
So sometimes you wake up in the morning, perhaps, and it's like, oh, you had a dream last night, and this is a good idea?
Some dreams, a lot of times, you know, more like showers, or you're sitting with friends, just, you know, you'll be talking about a movie or this or some idea. Like maybe you saw one of the Loki movies, about the time loop or whatever, the multiverse, and all of a sudden it fits with a presentation idea that you have, and the moment you fit it together, it just ends up working, you know?
Yeah, speaking of friends, then I guess you kind of bounce off some ideas with them, or you show them the routine?
Yeah, I mean, in Los Angeles, I made most of my friends there aren't magicians, so it's nice to have people from all walks of life there. Everyone's a transplant in Los Angeles, so it's a really good place just to diversify, you know, your different knowledge streams and try to come up with new ideas.
Right.
You know?
Now, are you a member of the Academy of Magical Arts? Do you go to the castle very frequently?
I do go to the castle a good amount of times, yeah.
Because I know they've been shut down, of course, and then they were kind of opened back up, and then...
Yeah, they're open now. They're a little bit slower, a little soft opening, but you know, things are picking up around, and you know, the shows aren't back fully. But I imagine next year fall, we'll be you know, the vacuum will be fully ready to go into.
How far do you live from the castle?
I'm like maybe 30 minutes away. Pretty
close.
That's
not bad.
Yeah.
So in other words, you're like six blocks.
Yeah.
Traffic is horrible.
Depending on the time of day.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
Yeah.
And so you've been in LA now for 3 years. So it's just prior to lockdown, basically. It's like, hey, we just got here and just getting excited, and all of a sudden, boom, everything kind of fell apart.
Yeah, a year and a, well, almost like 3.5 years. And so a year and a half I was there getting to know people, and things started to just really get swinging in LA, and I really got to know the neighborhoods, the people, my community, and then the lockdown happened. But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man,
interesting world when you come out of lock. It's like totally brand new world, though.
Did you have to get, or did you find new clients, or when you move from, I mean, across the country, literally from New York to California, did you have a new customer base, or did you have people who you had been performing for in California? You thought, hey, I've got a lot of people out there. Maybe I need to move closer to my market.
I had all the market in upstate New York. That's where a lot of those clients I can't do as often because, you know, with the distance, the flights and whatnot, it doesn't work to do the quick shows. I never actually built a substantial client base in L.A.
Okay.
For me, I never tried to do restaurant shows. I never tried to build that. Over time, I did get plugged in some friend groups where it's like it's a 100 million mastermind. So, yeah. You know, all 100 people are worth, you know, they have to pay $100,000 a year to be part of the club. Made friends with them, so they'll bring me into their events, and I don't really try to perform for like money. It's more I just build friendships with them.
Networking.
And then I just get booked for events, and I'm not really focusing the money right now.
I was talking with Steve Cohen, and he was talking about that also, working on different people's yachts or in their
homes. And for me, it's like sometimes they like, you know, I want to pay you, and a lot of times I would just want to go hang out with them as friends because they are my friends. You know, occasionally I'll let them pay me for some events, but for me, it's nice to be at these events where, you know, 10 people are all worth 100 million, right. And at that mindset to build those relationships with these people, these are more lifelong friends.
And when you're performing, you know? That's interesting. Then do you actually they say, "Hey, Steve, can you show us something?" Or do you come prepared? Or do you go knowing that they're going to ask you to do a half hour?
I'm always prepped to do stuff, but obviously sometimes they'll book me for like, "Hey, here's some of my close friends and clients." If I'm there, you know, I'm with their family and kids, and it's like I just naturally flow into the magic.
And do you keep things like in the car, saying, "I'll be right back" or something? Or
you keep it casual sometimes. You know, Sometimes I have more. I don't really do a full on show, but more like casual sleight of hand for people.
Okay.
You know, obviously with a deck of cards, you could entertain for hours, you know, using different presentations.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm focused more on the long-term benefit of just building these relationships and just pivoting myself.
What is your long-term goal? What do you want to do? What do you want to be?
Oh, geez.
You're going to have a 5- and 10-, 15-year goal, you know?
It's so funny to see community shift, you know, like the magic community with technology and all these different things. And it's... for me, the big goal isn't to have a big show in Vegas. I've got the opportunity to tour all across the country, do all sorts of shows.
And on TV and everything, too.
Yeah, like I'm working on some new magic projects, so the next Q project is supposed to be coming out in the next year. I'm torn of releasing it or not. A part of me wants to hold on to it and die with my material.
Yeah.
You know, like let them figure it out in the gray.
Yeah.
A little bit. I don't even want to give it away.
Yeah.
But that part of me does. You know, it's about that legacy.
But it might be a price. You can sell it away.
Well, that's the thing. But it's that legacy where it's like, what do I want?
Right.
But as far as for me, if I could just continue doing what I love doing the rest of my life, I'm a very happy man.
Yeah.
You know, and just continue just to add to the community, add to the friendships, and, you know.
Yeah, move through life with happiness.
I've had a pretty wonderful life the last, you know, the last 30 years. I've been really blessed. The fact that I get to really do what I love doing and I get the opportunity to travel the world. Make friends with amazing people.
Yeah.
You know, so it's I'm very blessed and just to continue doing that.
I don't
think there has to be some end ultimate purpose because anytime you reach a goal, you're going to have another goal, another goal, another goal.
That's true because you're going to reach goals faster than you would imagine if you set a goal. In other words, you have a 5-year goal, you might reach it in 3 years and say, I better have another one.
For me, it's just to do shows again.
Not a bad
goal. After all the shows disappeared, I just want to work again. You know, I would say I'm at like 10%, 20% capacity from what I was before the pandemic.
Yeah.
I also started selling art pieces.
Okay.
So I dabble in the art world now, apparently.
What kind of medium do you
use? Rubik's Cube Mosaic. So a giant sculpture of Rubik's Cubes.
Rubik's Cubes?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Have you shown in any galleries, museums, or anything?
No, I was planning to do some gallery stuff and whatnot, but the pandemic shut it all down. Mm-hmm. But I was selling to a few celebrities pieces where I would build, like, the giant faces and, you know.
Yeah. Interesting. So, like, of celebrities' faces, I mean, you actually can...
You could build anything. It's essentially pixels.
Course,
you know, so it's like you could, and with enough detail, you could do it.
Do you lay that out, like, on a computer first, and then you kind of...
Yeah, so you could design it in an app, you know.
Right. Fantastic. Steve, thanks very much. Good
Thank
luck.
You.
Always good seeing you. You're always exciting to be around, you know. You kind of invigorate.
I just like having fun. You know, if everyone has as much fun as me...
It'll be a better place.
Yeah. Well, I don't
We're
know.
All like Steve Brundage.
Maybe in more balance. You know, balance, responsibility, and fun.
Exactly.
A good mixture.
Thank you. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Steve Brundage. Scotty out. Thanks
again. Thank you.
So as we are waiting for, well, the dealers just reopened. They took a little lunch break from noon to 2, so they just reopened, and at about 2:30 we're going to be going in to see Alex Boyce. And also one of the things, by the way, we were just discussing real briefly with Fancy Nancy Anderson was the thing that Andy Gladwin talked about piracy, and it was interesting. He and Josh traveled to Serbia to physically confront a known pirate of magic. It was incredible. Wow, what a story! But speaking of stories, I've got Kevin Madden with me now. Kevin, what do you say you go by? What is the name actually?
My working name is Kevin the Cap, and my famous business partner Ash K. So Ash K was the first magician ever reviewed on Yelp in the world. To my knowledge, he was also the first magician to ever do a paid Zoom magic show, not for magicians, but for real people, on March 26th, 2020. And our friend in San Francisco, Jay Alexander, gave us the idea that we should think about doing some traveling this summer. His fantasy had been to...
It's the same Jay Alexander I'm thinking of, wears a hat, got a mustache. Yeah. He used to live in Houston. Yeah. I've known him for such a long time. Say hello when you see him.
I will. He's a close friend. So he told me the childhood fantasy of driving across the country with a deck of cards and $100. Yeah. And it's like, I already did romantic things, Jay. I have slept on the side of freeways in Paris and France trying to survive, and in Austria, and I'm done with that. So we left on July 1st on this planned trip at the beginning of the pandemic seeming to wind down, thinking that people would love to see magic live. And people, of course, are very hesitant when there's still a pandemic going on. But we're still making the trip, all 48 states plus D.C. in 120 days.
And you started again, what was the date?
On July 1st in San Francisco.
Now, when you're going and presenting this, you're not going into showrooms or theaters or whatever. You're actually doing street magic, I assume?
Oh, actually, no street magic. Our friend Fred Anderson, a fine juggler in San Francisco, said, you got to take a street show. And it's like, no, I want people to book our event. And we made the process super easy using some software called Mago Talent from our friend Michael Carey. And so that people could book us online. And I'm the first also magician that I know of to publish all of their prices, because normally people are somewhat secretive because they want to upsell. And that's understandable. That's business. Yeah. But we want to also give people a price break for different towns. So if it's up to $10,000, it's cheaper. If it's up to $100,000, it's still cheaper than a big city, so $100,000 and over. And then we offer all of our shows, whether it's Ash K, who specializes in corporate and family stuff, or myself doing only corporate, or both of us doing strolling, that we wanted to offer everything.
So were the shows all booked in advance before you left, so you had all 48 states ready to...
Absolutely not. We left with complete confidence that we are going to be slammed, and I thought the phone would be ringing off the hook.
Yeah,
and
now it's like working out for you.
All right. Well, you know. So the good news is that my brethren and sister in the magic community are great company, and I have been doing this professionally for 20 years, and as a kid I did it very seriously for a long time. And so... I'm getting to enjoy fabulous friendships from Joshua Quinn, the mentalist in New Orleans, who put me up for several days, to my good friend Kent Gunn and his wife, Judith, down in Merritt Island, to stopping by Cosmo Solano's Theater in Colorado, to hanging out with the great card mechanic, Tony. Tony, what is your last name? Tony Cabral. Sorry, Tony. Sorry. Whatever. And this sounds like name dropping, but it's a celebration of friendship, really. Like, these people tolerate me for decades. And it's just really fun hanging out with all of them and seeing them. And seeing America, because there's large parts of this country I'd never seen, even though I've lived abroad multiple times. You know?
But you are keeping it to the lower 48. You're not going to be going to Alaska.
No Alaska, no Hawaii. I figure Curtis Cam has Hawaii very skillfully covered. And the other three people that work regularly there. And Alaska seemed a bit far for the return on the investment.
It is. I talked to someone about coming up for a lecture tour, and they said, of the state. And they said, well, we're few and far apart, so you might be lecturing in one place, and there'll be six of us, and then you have to drive like 12 hours to the next city, and there'll be three people there. It's like, I don't know.
Three very appreciative people, but nonetheless.
You never see live lectures come up.
Yeah, the only thing for magicians that I offer, which was based on a takeoff of a lecture I heard from Gregory Wilson, it's called Via Negativa, or How Not to Be Me. So it's a lecture about all of my mistakes in magic, and everything from Ash K's name, which used to be Ashkenazi the Pretty Good, and you have the right reaction. You smiled because it's funny, but normal people, some of them thought it was a critique, that he's just pretty good. Some of them couldn't say it or spell it, like Ashkenazi. They thought it was too hard to spell. And so I renamed him 2007, based on Steve Sheraton, the Swiss magician, telling me to rename him, to booking procedures, to pricing, to PR, to the website, to what's a good picture versus what a picture that we think is good.
Yeah.
And it's a good lecture if people want to book me for the remaining of the tour. I'm still on the road until July, until Halloween.
And they get a hold of you how?
They go for the for this tour, it's unique to the tour. They go to five words, magic show drive across America.com. I'm going to say that one more time because you're all running over your keyboard. And you're all hitting pause on Scott's podcast, which I'm also downloading. And you're writing this down, magic show drive across America.com. And all the information is there. And we would love to see you on it as we meander back. Meander. See, I still say the wrong word. Yeah, yeah, all the way back.
Are you enjoying the convention here, by the way?
It's phenomenal. I mean, the quality of some of the presentations is so exceptional.
Have you been to the Magi Fest before?
I never have. And there were two set dates for this tour, which was Kent's birthday. Kent Gunn turned a certain age, which I'm not allowed to disclose. And the Magi Fest, I knew I'd be turning 55 on Saturday, tomorrow. And I was just very excited at the thought of being with my brethren and sistren on my birthday. And I'll just sit down with somebody I've never met in my life, and they'll show me something and in a very generous way. Like John Armstrong is a world-class card performer, and he shared some secrets about working with certain famous gaff decks that I had never thought of. And he's just happy to disclose if he could tell you're serious.
Well, just like right now, we're sitting over here with Tom Craven. Tom, when we talked about him yesterday, yes. Tom would be glad to show you stuff. I mean, you can sit down with him, and you can spend the next 2 days with him teaching you stuff. He's just a lovely guy, and he's amazingly has amazing background
and
in magic.
They're walking encyclopedias like Mr. Craven all around us. And I kind of walk into conventions fearing that I'm the worst magician here and that everybody there has something to teach me.
That's kind of the way I feel. It's like I'm the sponge. I want to pick up what everyone knows.
We just saw Terry Ward just stopped by. Yeah. I saw Terry Ward 4,000 miles ago when I stopped by the theater that he's performing in outside of Orlando. And a few weeks ago when I was staying with Kent Gunn, and because we went on Kent Gunn's birthday to go see Terry Ward.
Yeah.
And when you see Terry Ward, you're seeing somebody who's done 40,000 shows, and literally, and that I think he's one of the 10 finest close-up magicians in the world.
Yeah.
And if you sit down with him, he's happy to correct your technique.
Yeah.
He's happy to show you something.
Yeah, it's a great fraternity.
Right.
Kevin, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Good luck to you.
A pleasure. Thanks for taking the time to do the interview.
Thanks for enjoying the Magic Word Podcast. I appreciate
it. Huge fan.
So the Magic Word Podcast. That was Kevin, the Cap.
Yes, sir.
I got it. This is Scotty out. We just finished Joshua Jay's, I guess we'd call it a lecture. It was really kind of a sit-down with Andy Gladwin, and they discussed Josh's new book of How Magicians Think. Quite interesting. Some of the background, not only about some of the things that are in the book, but particularly about how it came to be and some of the stories behind it getting publishing and everything. Someone who hadn't been, a lot of us haven't been to conventions for a while, but someone who is getting back into magic again and someone who you have seen and probably certainly appreciate and know, and we'll talk about some of his stuff in just a minute, Mr. Chris Philpott. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey, good, Scott. How are you doing, man?
Fantastic. So good to see you. And I know a lot of people had moved around during this last year, and you were one of them that moved not only from the L.A., but from the U.S. to Canada. So you recently moved.
Yeah. It just, we have family. So we're in Windsor, just across the river from Detroit. So we're still, as soon as the border opens up a little more freely, we can go to jazz clubs and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so that'll be nice.
Yeah. Well, for the longest time, people from Canada couldn't even get across the border into the U.S. U.S. can get to there, but they couldn't get back, as I understand it. Up until about August, I think.
Yeah, I forget exactly what the rules were. I mean, I was able to move because I'm a dual citizen, so I can move pretty freely. But I do have to get a expensive COVID test every time I cross back into Canada.
Yeah. And the reason I was saying some of you may know the name, Chris has a multitude of fantastic products, many of which I've purchased, and if you don't, you should too. Perhaps you heard of 100 Monkeys? Yeah, that was this guy. And so he did that as well as the Endless Rope Trick, or what was that?
The End of My Rope Trick.
End of My Rope. That's an awesome trick.
Thank you.
And several other things you've been coming out with.
Yeah.
What were some of the other things that you have?
I don't even remember. I've got my book, Intimate Mysteries, and I'm working on a sequel, or maybe just going to be a new book.
French Postcards. Wasn't that
yours? French Postcards. Yeah, that's mine. Yeah. Yeah, I forget. I was just about to release something when the pandemic hit.
I just want to recall. I thought you had something. It was because I was booking on a lecture tour as everything all fell apart. Yeah, in 20.
Yeah. Remember how many times we, like, you know, thought, do we cancel? Do we not cancel? And then it was forget about it.
Yeah, it was like 20, 25 cities or so.
We were over 30.
Was it over 30? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Because you don't lecture very often, if at all. So that was going to be just awesome if you would have gotten
it. I only did one virtual lecture the whole time, and it turned into like this five-hour epic thing where I think I went through a bottle of wine during that. but for the most part, I haven't been doing the online stuff.
Of course, I know your full-time job really is as a screenwriter. Did you go back and start devoting or focusing more of your time really into your work rather than trying to work on magic stuff?
The film business really shut down for a while, too. It seems to be up and at them again. But, I've been working on two different TV projects, trying to get them off the ground right now and working with a producer who's taking them out.
In the U.S. or for the Canadian broadcast? Or?
No, both in the U.S.
Okay.
So that's where most of my contacts are. That's been taking most of the last few months. I've just been working on writing and polishing for TV stuff, and I'm just turning my head to magic now. So this is sort of
you're coming out.
This is
back in magic. Coming back.
I want to get my head back in magic. Yeah, so that's where I'm at.
Now, although I haven't seen him, I understand Steve Valentine's here, and who's one of your best friends.
Yeah,
have you seen him here?
Oh, yeah, we've been hanging out.
Okay. If you see him, tell him I'm looking for him, too.
Okay.
I heard he was here, but I've not seen him yet.
Here, I'm gonna text him right now.
Okay. But I, again, know that you have invented a lot of things, put a lot of things out, and had the lecture that we had planned over there then, too. So
hey, Steve,
hopefully that...
Scott Wells wants to talk to you, period.
Funny. Text that to him.
Yeah.
And he'll say, no. Seems like sometimes at conventions, you know, he's been booked for something. It's like, yeah, we'll get together, and then we haven't. You know, just the our paths have been going in different directions, or he was checking out early, or he was just in for a short time.
This is kind of a nice size convention. It's not like Magic Live.
That's true. This is 500, which is still larger than most. I think IBM and SAM may be larger, particularly when they combine.
But how many people are at Magic Live?
1,800.
1,800, yeah.
So, this is more intimate than that, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Is this your first Magi Fest?
It is, yeah.
It used to be that this was over 1,000 also. I mean, this was like the first one out of the shoot, usually in early January. And so everybody was kind of, after Christmas, you know, coming together. And even though it was snow and ice out, people would be, you know, camped out in here in the hotel. And
When I did my Penguin lecture, it happened to be, you know, the same week as Magi Fest. So I was like, oh, great, I'll go. I'll just stay for Magi Fest afterwards. And then they bumped me. they bumped me. Penguin bumped me to a couple weeks later, and it was just like in a snowstorm opposite the Academy Awards. It was.
But you do have a Penguin lecture that people can go and download now.
Yeah.
How long was that? 2 hours? 2.5?
4 hours. And 3 minutes.
Okay, you beat me. Mine was 3.5, so yours was four.
I said I'm 1 minute longer than Max Mavens. And
Was that a goal?
I said I make no comment as to quality, but mine is longer.
The quantity is there.
It's there,
and I just talk real slow, more like Eugene Berger. So you get a lot more out of it, too. So is there anything that you have been working on or kind of in the back of your mind that you're wanting to... I mean, now you're back into magic again a little bit. You're going to start to come up with something, and so you...
Yeah, there was an effect I was going to release just before the pandemic hit. I'm working on a book.
Independently, not sold through Vanishing Ink or Penguin or anybody. I mean, it's going to be available through chrisphilpott.com or something.
Yeah, and also I'm looking for doing partnering with people because I don't necessarily want to manufacture. Mm-hmm. I've had one effect that I had to do some manufacturing with, and it was I hated it. So, you know, these people manufacture stuff. I actually should go into the dealer's room and start meeting some people. Hey, you want to mix
this is a place to network, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just find it really crowded in the dealer's room right now. I'm not quite used to crowds yet.
Okay, well, I understand that. And let me say one time to go in there is when there's a lecture going on because it's a ghost town in there. And the dealers are still open during the other functions that are going. No, not all the dealers are in there, but it's still open because some of the dealers, I was just talking, like I'm rooming with Richard Hatch, and Dick said, you know, I want to see his lecture too, so I just shut down, come and watch the lecture, then I'll open because no one's coming in here anyhow.
Right,
so
my point is,
if you want to go and talk to Penguin or whomever, I would imagine there'll be a few people in there who you can kind of go in during this next function probably and visit.
Probably, yeah.
But anyhow, good to see you then. Glad
that
you're doing so well.
It's been a while. Last time I saw you, we were both at the same Lucy Darling virtual show. And we were in the waiting room to go.
Yes, that's right.
I go, hey, Scott. It's like, where's that from?
I remember hearing the voice, and it's like, yeah, I think I recognize that voice. And speaking of which, and Lucy's going to be the next up, I think, tonight in about an hour or so. And I just saw her at the TAOM convention. She was in Austin and gave a fantastic lecture. Now, she's performing tonight, but I don't know if she's on for tomorrow, but hopefully she's going to be lecturing again. It was just how to build her act and the stage and the personality and everything and the character.
She's got really personality.
Good. She does. Well, yeah, you were still in L.A., I think, whenever she had won the Stage Magician of the Year, was it?
Yeah. I didn't move. I haven't even been here, not here, Columbus, but it was less than a year that I moved. Okay. Less than a year ago.
I was thinking it was, during this time when we were talking.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, thanks very much.
Okay.
Good, thanks for your words over here.
Nice to see you,
Good
man.
To see you, too, my friend. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Chris Philpott. This is Scotty out. So now we are still in between time, getting ready here shortly to see Lucy Darling's show, but we're here with the legend of street magic. Here he is, Cosmo, the man K. Hey, Kai.
Hey, Scott, what's going on, man?
It's awfully good to see you.
It's great to be seen. It's great to see anybody, right?
At this point, that's
right. I never thought in my whole life that I would be saying that I missed magic conventions, but I miss magic conventions. So all of you people that aren't here, I miss you, too.
Yeah, I do, too. You know, we got 500 people here, mostly young people, it seems like.
Yeah,
you know, we're the old guys.
That's
right. You know,
we're always the old guys, dude. It doesn't matter.
So when we come into the room, we raise the age, don't we?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple conventions where we probably don't raise the age, but soon we will. Soon, any moment.
That's right. Thank you for the wine, by
the way.
You're welcome, man. Appreciate that. Having a little drink as we prepare for the evening show. But you are always a dealer, I know, at the Magi Fest. You've been coming here forever, basically.
Yeah, I'm not really a dealer, but I have somebody sit behind that table.
The real magic table.
Yeah, I just kind of show up, you know.
You used to do videos. You're not doing videos this time?
Not this time, you know. I mean, this is the first really big convention, you know, that coming back from the pandemic, and although that thing is still raging on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just kind of felt like I wanted to just see some friends and hang out, and so that's what I'm doing. And I got my buddy Nate Hickey, who's fantastic, behind the table there, trying to hawk real magic for smart people stopping by it.
And they do.
Yeah.
Or they continue their subscription.
Yeah, they do. They stop by and say, this is the best deal I've ever had in magic, you know.
It is.
Yeah, it is. And for all you guys who aren't Real Magic subscribers, well,
why not?
Why not? Yeah.
Because you're providing, what is that, about almost 2 hours worth of content? Is it per month now?
No, but you know what? We update the site every week. So it's not just with issues of Real Magic, but, you know, and it's, you know, we also throw in, you know, like lectures and all kinds of other additional things that you can get on the site that's included in your $5 subscription.
Kind of short takes. It's only $5?
Yeah, it's only $5, and I appreciate you allowing me to plug Real Magic, but I'm just glad to be back, you know, and I'm glad to be talking to magicians and seeing old friends, you know, at this convention. And, you know, Josh did a great job. He's kept everybody safe here. I know there's a lot of people who aren't happy about the mask mandate or the vaccine mandate. But, you know, I think that's where we are, and sadly. And, you know, so I don't want to make a political statement because I don't want to make anybody upset with me. But
well, you and I differ on so many things, but we are best friends because of our differences. And I don't have anybody else in my life I love more to spar with than you, it seems like.
because we will, as soon as we get off of this.
Probably because we always have the biggest smiles on our face the whole time we're talking. And but it's so fun and funny. But there are so many things, bottom line, we actually agree on. And that's what I wish. Let me tell you. Okay, this is a real aside. I was watching on YouTube an old TV show. It was in black and white, started in the late 50s, went into the 60s. It was Playboy After Dark with Hugh Hefner. Mm-hmm. And
I've seen every episode. Okay. No, not really. It's not true. That's
but he would have...
But I want to see every episode.
You should go on YouTube and watch this. And the reason is because he would have all these guys who were in the magazine that he would be interviewing or talking about, you know, through jazz and pop pole or fashion and whatnot. So it's like, you know, the camera is on the elevator buttons as you get up to the penthouse. The doors open and there's him with a pipe and he's with Barbie Benton and he's saying, oh, hey, welcome, glad you're here. Here, you know, my friend, this is Bill Cosby and over here's Bob Newhart and we're going to have Creedence Clearwater Revival in a few minutes over here. Why don't you go over to the snack bar and get yourself a drink, first of all, at the bar and help yourself. It's kind of like, you know, you're part of a guest and you're walking around and people are clinking glasses and you're walking through the penthouse and sit down, you know, and you got people who are telling stories, you know, like Sammy Davis Jr. and Anthony Newley. Of course, Anthony Newley wrote Candyman and a lot of other songs. And my point is that, oh, and then like Creedence Clearwater Revival just sitting down and they're telling a story and then Hugh would say, well, do you mind singing something? Oh, yeah. Well, I get up and kind of sit in the, you know, go in the library, you know, and then they sing a song. But, you know, there's James Brown and Aretha Franklin and all these people. And the point is, back then, we were all together. We had political differences. We had racial strife. But for a few moments when you watch that, we're all together. We're brothers and sisters. And it's like we all have a commonality and love of life, basically. Yeah. And I see magic. Boy, it's a long way of coming around to say I see magic as being a unifying kind of thing that gives us life, and that's what this convention does, gets us back together.
Yeah, and I think that they did a great job of pulling this thing off in a really horrible time in our world, you know.
Yeah.
And so
yeah. with the best that they can.
Yeah.
You know, in a situation like this.
Yeah.
Because there have been other conventions I've already attended, the colon get together, Abbott's, and then after that was it the Collectors Expo in Vegas, and then TOM last week, now this, and going to be going to Trix in North Carolina, you know, coming up soon. So, I mean, we're slowly getting back, I think, with a lot of conventions. So you got anything else that's planned convention-wise after this, or is this your only
We'll make an appearance at the
Trix?
At the Trix convention, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that, I think this is it for the end of the year, you know. And sadly, you know, Garrett Thomas and I do a show together, and it's a theater show, and we're not able to do that. We did one a couple months ago, and it was great. And then,
did you have good attendance?
Yeah, we sold out. We sell out everywhere we go. But this, you know, that then, you know, COVID reared its ugly head again. Everything was canceled, and now here we are, you know, wishing that we could do shows. And you know what? I love magicians, and I love coming to magic conventions and seeing all these old friends like you, which I love you to death. But I really love doing shows, and I really wish I could get back to doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's what makes me want to get out of bed every day.
Do you like doing theatrical shows or street shows, or does it matter?
Well, I love both. I mean, the thing about doing the streets is...
It's a challenge?
The streets is not a challenge, you know, and that's why I don't do the streets much anymore. It's a challenge for most people who walk out of the street, but it's not a challenge for me anymore. I don't mean to sound egotistical. I've just done it 30,000 times in my life.
Because that's why you're the legend.
You know, that's okay. That's why I'm the legend. I'm an old guy who's been able to do 30,000 shows. But Garrett, and I, this thing that I'm doing with Garrett is in theaters. It's a theater show, you know, the black box theaters, or, you know, we can even go into a banquet room and set up and do our show. But it's our...
Is my team back and forth, or what's the concept?
So there's actually three of us on the show. It's myself and Garrett Thomas and Joe Maxwell, who... is also a musician. He played with toured with Moby for 5 years, and was he was on Amy Winehouse's last show.
Okay.
Yeah, so this guy's a pretty accomplished guy. So it's the three of us. We come out. It's a great show. It's very diverse in how we approach magic. Garrett is this great sleight of hand guy, and I'm a funny street guy, and then Joe is kind of right in the middle. It's a blast to do the show.
Does Joe do magic, or is he?
Yeah, he does.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a good magician, and you know, that's what I want to do. And that's my last great adventure. I'm getting old now, so older now. So that's my last thing. I want to go out and do that for the next.
There was a comment that Josh Jay had made that was in the book when he was talking with David Blaine. And David Blaine's theory on performing for shows for money or whatever is, would I do this for a dollar? And if I would do this for a dollar, then go ahead, I'll let my agent negotiate whatever. But it's like, basically, would I go do this for free? Kind of a show. We're at that point in our age. Perhaps I'm much more selective as to what I do and accept. Are you kind of feel like the same way? It has to be something that gives you joy?
Yeah. I have no interest in doing it. You know, I'm kind of arrogant because I only do what makes me happy now. You know, I'm at 65 years old. I just turned 65. It's just my birthday. I know I don't.
Happy birthday.
No, thank you very much. I know I don't look like I'm 65. I look like I'm 85. But but I am really just 65, and I only do what I want to do. So I did some street shows a few weeks ago. It was great, and I did 3 days and did really, really well. And after being off for 18 months with the COVID thing, it was amazing, you know, how hard it was to remember everything that I do in that show. But at the end of the 3 days, I got it back, and so I love to do that. But I love, and it's, there's nothing like being on a street corner and entertaining people at 7 o'clock at night. They just finished eating their food, they had a couple drinks, and they stop by, and you create this show out of nothing. It's just a wonderful, wonderful experience for me as a performer. Have the ability and to give these people those moments that they'll remember forever. That's the wonderful thing about magic, is we get to give people this wonderful gift of a moment. You know, a gift. You know, if you can do magic at a high level and you're standing in line at the grocery store and you get a chance to do some magic for the people behind you, and you can do it at a high level, you're changing their day. You're changing the perspective on life. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And that's what I think magicians should do. That's what I'm doing. I only do it when I want to. So.
I remember Jeff McBride saying, if you're a magician, you should be a magician 24/7. That doesn't mean necessarily that you're going out and saying, hey, you want to see a trick?
Yeah.
But you're ready for something if somebody does ask.
Yeah. And Garrett, that's how Garrett Thomas lives. I mean,
Garrett is the new Di Vernon.
No, I think he's better than Vernon. I mean, I think he's the best close-up magician to ever breathe. I really do believe that. And I get to watch him. I have the pleasure and the pleasure of watching this guy perform every night, you know, and he's something different, you know. I mean, his thinking, but he loves, he's always prepared to do something, you know, and he gives those people those wonderful moments that they never forget, and that's what the beauty about magic. That's what we should be thinking about doing, is just going out and, you know, giving away
creating those moments.
That's what COVID has taken away from us, is taken away from me, is the, I don't have that. I'm in my house. I'm not out in the world, you know, and I don't have that opportunity to give those moments to people, you know. And I really, 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 really miss that so much. That's why going on the street last weekend was so great. It was just great just to go out and see their faces and do that to them and with them, for them. You know, it's just wonderful. Magic is wonderful. It's been the greatest gift of my life, other than my kids and my family and my wife, you know, my dogs. I mean, it's just nothing better. I am so blessed. I'm the most blessed guy on the planet because I discovered this thing called the streets. And it's been the best. I mean, it really is best.
Made a lot of friends.
And you are the best, man. You are the best.
Thank you very much. I think, no, you're the best. So you're the best.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Cos.
You're welcome.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Cosmo. This is Scotty Allen.